Moses Maimonides was born in Cordoba, Spain, in the year 1135. In the year 1148, when Maimonides was hardly 13 years of age, his family was forced to flee because of some Arab anti-Jewish persecutions. From the age of 13 until his death, the greatest of medieval Jewish thinkers never again set foot on Spanish soil. But if you were to see any of his original manuscript, any of his letters or of his public documents, you would see that each has this signature, Moshe ben Maimon HaSefaradi, Moses ben Maimon, the son of Maimon, a Spaniard. The Spanish Jew, or the Jew of Spanish descent, never forgot and always took great pride in the Spanish Jewish Association. It was a mark of status in the Jewish community to be a Sephardi of Spanish descent. Still today, some of the descendants of the original settlers of New York City take great pride in their association in a Spanish-Portuguese synagogue. And in Israel, the Jews of Spanish descent have congregated together in their own Sephardic synagogues and have their own Sephardic religious leadership. Now, at first glance, one would presume that the Jew of Spanish descent would want to erase from his mind every association, every identification with this land where so much Jewish blood was shed. There was, in the year 1391, a community of Jews in Spain numbering almost 1 million souls. In that year, half of this number were either put to the sword, sold into exile, or coerced into baptism. After 1391, the Spanish Jewish community gasped a long century and a year death agony, until in 1492, Ferdinand and Isabella promulgated a final irrevocable decree of expulsion. And the 300,000 Jews who were left in Spain were given 30 days to evacuate that country. And from 1492 almost to the present, Spain has been Judenrein, unencumbered, unembarrassed by the existence within its borders of a single professing Jewish family. To understand then the identification, the loving association of the Sephardi with Spain, one must go back beyond this high tragedy to the high grandeur and triumph which was once Sephardic Jewish life. For almost five centuries, Sephardic Jewry was the most prosperous, the most creative, the most urbane and sophisticated Jewish community that had ever existed, or that was to exist until our own day. History books will refer to the Spanish Jewish experience as a golden age. And somehow the nobility and the grandeur of that age still glistens through the centuries, despite the dulling and numbing pain and tears of the centuries. Now, if you or I, as American Jews, were to be set down in Spain during the golden age of Spanish Jewry, we would find that Jewry lacked many of the luxuries and certainly the personal sense of security which we enjoy. But if a Jew of Babylonia in the 5th century, or a Jew of Egypt from the 1st century, or a Jew of Poland or of Eastern Europe from the 17th and 18th centuries were to be set down by some H.G. Wells time capsule in Spain during that golden age, he would stand numb in amazement and marvel. For the Spanish Jewish experience was the first time in all of our history outside of biblical days when the Jew glimpsed that larger freedom and that grander and greater opportunity which we have come to enjoy in our own day. The Spanish Jew was welcomed even into the topmost levels and ranks of Spanish society. The Sephardi provided Spain with most of her talented professional and artistic class, her mathematicians and her architects and her musicians and her interpreters and her cartographers, her financiers, her men of commerce and of industry. Jewish business people were welcomed into the most intimate councils of the Spanish business community. Jewish business people provided the risk capital which allowed Spanish ships to sail around the tip of Africa to bring back the jewels and the spice of the Far East. And Jewish risk capital provided the caravans which went to Egypt and the Near East for the spices and for the grain of those nations. The Jews, the Sephardim, were the backbone of the Spanish middle class, on which the efflorescence of medieval Spanish culture and commerce depended. And the Spanish Jewish community was not only well-to-do, but well-versed in matters of spiritual life and of faith. It was not only a prosperous community, but a pious community. Hymns written by the Spanish Jews form much of the beautiful background of our worship service till this day. Two of the three great commentaries on the Bible, the commentaries of Ibn Ezra and of Nachmanides, were written by Spanish Jews. The great medieval compilation of mystical Jewish speculation, the Zohar, was edited in Spain. Almost every one of the classic medieval Jewish philosophies was written by a Sephardi. Hebrew grammar was first developed scientifically by the Sephardic Jewry. So it went. An original, creative, productive Jewish community. Productive not only in matters of faith, in matters of its spiritual life, in matters of its business life, but productive in all areas and all activities. For the Spanish Jewish community was not limited or constricted or circumscribed in its Jewish learning. Its viewpoint was as broad as was the knowledge of the day. The Spanish Jewish community made contributions which far transcended their religious community. Interestingly, it was Sephardic Jewish cartographers and mathematicians who first adapted the astrolabe and the compass to navigational use, and so made it possible for the great voyages of discovery of Da Gama and Magellan and of Columbus, voyages which would otherwise have been impossible. And it was Sephardic Jewish translators and scholars who brought into Europe the classic texts of antiquity, the Greek philosophers and the Greek scientists and the Arab men of medicine and men of thought. And by translating these texts into Hebrew and into other European vernaculars, helped to dispel the darkness of medieval life and to bring about the Enlightenment, which was to burst out in the Renaissance and flow on into modern times. This was a great Jewry. A Jewry which every rabbi would love to revisit. We want to walk again in the streets walked by these men. We want to see what artifacts, what art, what architecture, what building, what monuments still remain. For from the very beginning of our education, we have been immersed in the contributions of these Spanish Jews. We have been exalted by their adventures and by their history. We cannot really imagine Jewish life without their contribution. But it is one thing to search and quite another to find. On our trip, I felt myself very much like some of these treasure seekers of the stories of Robert Louis Stevenson. I had a map. The map was detailed and complete. I was armed with all the necessary information. But whenever I came to the designated location and began to seek, I found that others had been there before me and that the treasure for which I sought had been dispersed to the four corners of the earth. In Spain, I felt that some demonic giant hand had somehow effaced and erased from the blackboard of history every trace, every record, every jot and tittle that remained to tell us of the 1,500 years of Jewish identification with Spain. And this is strange. For Spain is a country of antiquities. It is full of Roman antiquities and of Visigothic antiquities and of Arab antiquities and of Catholic antiquities. but of Jewish antiquities. Well, imagine yourself in a college classroom. Imagine yourself looking at the blackboard on which the professor had but recently set down an outline of his lesson. And more recently, a janitor had erased hurriedly that lesson. What would you see? Here and there, perhaps, a single half letter reminding you that there had once here been meaning and order and nothing else. And that is what you find in Spain. Here and there, a suggestion, a trace of the Jewish past. But otherwise, erasure, nothing. Seville once had a Jewish community numbering well into 30,000 souls. There was a continuous history of Jewish identification with the city of Seville for 1,400 years. At its height, the Seville Jewish community boasted of 23 synagogues, of one of the finest hospitals in all of Europe, of a Jewish merchants' guild whose tower could be seen throughout the city, and in whose halls the Jewish men of business planned for the well-being of their community. That is the past. And today? Well, today one can visit Seville and never realize that a single Jew was once settled here, lived in its homes, or walked these streets. Of the 23 synagogues, two remain. One is a convent, the other a church. Neither is open to the public, and on neither facade is there a single symbol, a single inscription, a single mark of identification which would establish them as ancient Jewish houses of worship. The hospital, the Jewish merchant's tower, has long since been razed. The mezuzah has been replaced in every home by the crucifix. One can visit the Barrio de Santa Cruz, the ancient quarter of the city of Seville, and not realize in a single fact that this was once the ancient Judaria, the Jewish quarter. That here 30,000 Jews through 14 centuries lived and worked and dreamed and hoped. Not a street sign identifies the Barrio de Santa Cruz as a Jewish community. And only one street sign in all of Seville remembers the name of a Jew or recalls his Jewish past. And that street sign deals not with the grandeur, the accomplishments, the achievements of Seville's Jewry, but with its downfall and degradation. It is a street of Susanna. Susanna was the beautiful young daughter of a very rich Murano family. A Murano family who had been coerced into accepting Christianity, but who in their hearts sought to retain their Jewish identification. Susanna had a young lover, the Catholic son of one of the more famous Catholic families of Seville. Love made her indiscreet. She told to her lover the secret meeting place of the Muranos, where they would come together to discuss matters of mutual interest and to worship the God of Israel. And her lover told this place of meeting to the Inquisition. And the Inquisition raided a meeting of Muranos. And Susanna's mother and father were burned at the stake. And the Murano community of Seville was decimated and destroyed, and Susanna herself was forced into a penniless exile from which only a premature death relieved her. Susanna is recalled by Seville, but her fellow citizen, Isaac Abarbanel, financier of Columbus, statesman and intimate to Ferdinand of Aragon, philosopher and scholar, of Isaac Abarbanel, not a trace. Seville remembers Susanna, but of Judah ibn Verga, whose charts accompanied Columbus on his voyage, scholar, historian, pious Jew, of Judah ibn Verga, not a mention, not a trace. Indeed, one could tick off in a matter of several minutes almost all the Jewish antiquities which remain in Spain. in Toledo, the matrix, the center of Jewish life, for 1,800 years. Two synagogues, one home. The El Transito, the beautiful, high, rectangular synagogue built in the 14th century, which was saved for posterity because one of the Knights Orders used it as a lodge room, now a national monument. The convent of Maria El Blanca, an older synagogue, much more beautiful, many columned and many arched, closed generally to the public, open only upon special request. And the home of Samuel Halevi Abulafia, patriot, statesman, scholar, treasurer of Pedro VII, saved not because of its identification with one of the great statesmen of the Spanish history, but because a century later the genius poet, genius painter El Greco chose it as his home and as his workshop. And that is the only, these are the only memories which Toledo has of its large Jewish community. In Cordova, one museum, one synagogue, and two street signs. The museum not yet opened, supposedly the house of in which Moses Maimonides was born, actually the largest and finest home which the Spanish Tourist Bureau could find in the ancient Jewish quarter, built hastily in the last years as a tourist attraction. The synagogue, a small room, 18 by 22 feet, surrounded by one of those beautiful Hebrew friezes, which were traditional in the 13th and 14th century in Spanish Jewish architecture. And the street signs, erected within the last 5 years, commemorating the two greatest philosophers born in Cordova, both Jewish philosophers, Judah Halevi and Moses Maimonides. In Madrid, at the Royal Archaeological Museum, a few tombstones bearing Hebrew inscriptions. The Royal Monastery at the Escorial, some magnificently illumined and handwritten Hebrew Bibles. And there you have it. The sum and substance of 15 centuries of creative Jewish identification with Spain. For it remains as true today as it has been during most of the last 4 or 5 centuries, that the best way for a Jew to learn of the style and of the spirit and of the soul of Spanish Jewry is to go to our library or to any good Jewish library and to immerse himself in the hundreds upon hundreds of books, the collections of poetry, of thought, of philosophy, of history, and of biography which this creative Jewry has bequeathed to us. So much for the past. What of the present Spanish Jewish community? But one can describe the past in her terms of high achievement and of high tragedy. But when we speak of the present, we must use words which connote other than nobility of achievement or nobility of life. For the 4,000 Jews who live in Spain today live there on sufferance. They eke out a meager living. They have no rights as such. Their life is not one of achievement, nor are they welcome in most circles of Spanish life. From 1492, for 4 centuries, till 1892, Spain was Judenrein. And then the last of the Spanish kings, Alfonso XIII, having designs to increase the hegemony of Spain in North Africa, began to cultivate Sephardic Jewish friendship. He needed the support of the important Jewish communities of Tunis and of Tangiers and of Tetuan. And so he established in Madrid a society for Spanish Jewish studies. He established at the University of Madrid a chair in Hebrew, and he allowed a few Sephardim to return to Spain, although he did not grant to them citizenship. The dictator president, Primo de Rivera, continued this tentative, gingerly rapprochement. And by the outbreak of the liberal democracy, there were possibly 2,500 or 3,000 Jews living in Spain. With the Republic, real hope came to the Spanish Jewish community. The Republic, as one of its first acts, proclaimed religious freedom for Spain. The Republic annulled the expulsion decree of 1492. The Republic in 1935 celebrated with great éclat the 800th anniversary of the birth of Moses Maimonides. These were years in which Jews were being forced out of so many places in Europe, and many found their way into Spain. But with the revolt, with the Franco outbreak, this hope was quickly shattered. Franco drew most of his support from the Catholic Church and from the Nazi army. Certainly these two bodies were in agreement that the Israel Jewry was a pestilence that ought to be eradicated and certainly had no place in Spain. Franco identified the Jews with the subversives, with the communists, with the anti-Spaniards, the disloyal. By the end of 1939, when order was reestablished, there were less than 500 Jews in all of Spain. And these had no rights. Many were unwilling to identify themselves as Jews, fearing of the repercussion. In 1942, Franco decreed that no Jewish worship might take place at any point within Spanish borders. During the war, whatever unfortunates managed to cross the Pyrenees fleeing the Nazi armies were quickly interred. And then after the war, for reasons best known to himself, Franco began to tentatively reverse his course. Some say that it had a great deal to do with his desire to win NATO arms and American finance. Far be it from me to judge his virtues. But in any case, Franco has allowed a few Sephardic and Ashkenazic Jews to establish themselves in Spain. There is a community in Barcelona numbering some 2,500 souls. The community in Madrid numbers 1,000 souls, and there are perhaps 500 other Jews scattered about the peninsula. He has allowed the community in Barcelona to buy a small three-story building, which is their synagogue and their center. He has prevented the church, which has never believed in religious coexistence or even admitted that such a term exists. Franco has prevented the church from ordering a complete cessation of all Jewish activity. He has even allowed, 2 years ago, the importation of a young Israeli teacher couple to Barcelona to provide some religious education for the young people of that community. And just this past high holidays, he allowed the community in Madrid to leave the dirty, dingy, badly lit synagogue basement which we visited for airier and somewhat larger quarters. But that is the sum and substance of it. This much remains true. Citizenship, Spanish citizenship, is open to the average Jew only upon conversion. One must be a Catholic to be a citizen of Spain. The synagogue may not display any signs or symbols of its Jewish activity that can be seen from the street. Indeed, it may not call itself a synagogue. It is a cultural center, for synagogue implies worship, implies a religion, and there is only one religion in all of Spain. The synagogue may not even list its telephone number in the telephone book, much less place an article in the newspaper giving the time and address of its services. A police officer must be present at every worship service. Every public pronouncement from the pulpit must be censored. Every communication which goes between members of the congregation must have the stamp of approval of the local procurator. Every Jewish child receiving public or private education in Spain must attend the compulsory one-hour class in Catholic catechism given in all schools. No Jewish marriage may be solemnized within the Spanish borders, and a young couple desiring to be married must go to North Africa or France in order to complete their marriage. When a Jew dies, his obituary, as all Catholic obituaries, must be preceded by a large black cross, a crucifix. And this cross weighs heavily on the Jewish soul. So much so that most of the Jews of Spain are afraid to identify themselves openly with the Spanish Jewish community. Of the estimated 400 Jewish families of Madrid, only 76 have subscribed their names to the membership roll of the center there. For they know all too well that they live on sufferance, that they are simply tolerated, that they have no rights, and that if the government should change the direction of its activity, if it should need support from another circle besides America where Jewish public opinion counts for something, they know all too well that this sufferance can be quickly destroyed. For they know that the Catholic Church is unforgiving and unforgetting, and that it is determined against the will of the Vatican. The Catholic Church of Spain is determined to keep Spain pure, to establish in Spain a total monopoly of souls such as exists in no other country of the world. What of the future of Spanish Jewry? Its future depends upon the whims and the direction of Spanish politics. But this much is certain, that whereas the American Jew walks in confidence and in hope, the Spanish Jew has as his daily companions frustration and fear and a great deal of anxiety. What of the future of Spain herself? Well, I am not a prophet, but it does not require a prophet's insight and revelation to recognize that one cannot maintain a 16th century feudal, monopolistic, oligarchical, church-centered economy in the 20th century. Spain lacks today the most rudimentary educational and medical facilities. The rate of illiteracy in Spain is the highest any place in Europe. To travel through the back roads of Spain is to recognize that the Spanish farm is completely unmechanized, and to see farmers winnowing the wheat the way our ancestors did in ancient Israel 4,000 years ago. Government is making some heroic efforts to redistribute some of the wealth, to provide some modern mechanization, to bring some industry into Spain. But the government depends on an economy which depends in turn upon American largesse. And the government rests on top of a feudal oligarchical system which has not changed in 500 years and gives no sign of being willing to change and to adapt in order to meet modern times. There are still the few who have and the many who have not. A church triumphant and a people impoverished and illiterate. And somehow, some way, one senses, one knows that the Spanish people, who are after all completely aware of what is happening outside of their borders, that the Spanish people will insist upon and demand and achieve some other form of government, some other distribution of wealth. Indeed, one senses that had it not been for the American support of the last decade, this insistence would have come to the fore long before now. And so a rabbi leaves Spain, much involved in the Spanish-Jewish paradox. By a form of extremely painful surgery, Spain excised, cut out from herself, her middle class, one of her most talented and loyal of groups. And after this surgery, Spain was able to continue as a major world power for about a century, living largely off the treasures brought in from the New World. But then Spain collapsed. To visit the small villages of Spain is to recognize the extent of that collapse. For one sees a majestic, costly, beautiful cathedral towering above mud huts and hovels. Not a school, not a hospital, not a piece of machinery. Only the church triumphant and the people impoverished and illiterate, lacking the basic necessities of life. And what of the cancer which was excised from Spain? What of our people? The exile was difficult and it was painful. But today, on the other shore of the Mediterranean, our faith has created health and life and opportunity. A new economic order, a new democracy, hospitals and schools and workers' homes, the best that can be created in modern times. And so a rabbi leaves Spain, conscious of the paradox. Spain without her Jews quickly fell into ruin. And Israel without Spain mourns that connection, but has somehow managed to rebuild its strength, to continue its faith in a tolerant, humanistic, progressive, democratic form of life. And one leaves Spain congratulating one's ancestors that they were those who had the courage to walk into exile.